This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In its policy toward Iran, the Bush administration has been split between advocates of regime change and behavior change, according to my guest Laura Rosen. She says those who want the U.S. military to overthrow President Ahmadinejad are losing. The pragmatists within the Bush administration, who want to change the Iranian regime's behavior through sanctions, international pressure, and incentives, are winning. Rosen is the national security correspondent for the Washington Monthly. She's a contributor to National Journal and a senior correspondent for the American Prospect. I asked her how she thinks the pragmatists have become more influential within the Bush administration.
Ascendant a few years ago were a group of people who believed that you couldn't really deal with this Iranian regime and that the way to deal with it was to change it the way they changed Iraq. The past year, you've seen the realization that the U.S. is overwhelmed with its occupation of Iraq, and you've seen the pragmatists who support trying to get this Iranian regime to change its behavior become more ascendant. And that group is led by Condoleezza Rice in the State Department, and they're trying to work now with the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese to pressure Iran through economic sanctions to suspend its uranium enrichment and stop its support for these destabilizing groups.
You say that the regime change position within the Bush administration has lost a lot of its power. What are some of the signs that it's lost power?
One is the departure of officials from the Bush administration who had supported that position, such as John Bolton, who'd been the ambassador to the United Nations, several people from the Pentagon, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, who had headed a policy shop that has several people who were brought in 2002, 2003 to work on Iran and subverting that regime. Cheney's office itself is now considered the main sort of last vestige of the people in the administration who are deeply skeptical that the U.S. is going to be able to get Iran to stop its nuclear program through diplomacy. And you've seen many reports in recent weeks that there's a kind of hot dispute between the Condi Rice group at the State Department and people in Cheney's office who are perhaps trying to sabotage her and wait their opportunity to seize control of the policy again.
He said that another sign that the hardliners on Iran have lost some of the power, some of the regime change advocates have lost some of their power, is that a group called the Iran-Syria Policy Operations Group was closed down. What was this group and who shut it down?
The lead person in the State Department doing the Iran nuclear issue is a undersecretary of state named Nick Burns. He's the guy who Rice sends to talk with the Europeans, the Russians, the Chinese about coming up with some united front to pressure Iran to change its behavior. And, you know, the past year he's been leading that effort. At the same time, there have been all sorts of media reports that there's this Iran-Syria Policy Operations Group that was coordinating between the different agencies of the U.S. government in an unusual way on action to kind of poke at Iran. And the group was little understood. Some of the people involved were clearly from the regime change school. I reported a year ago that there was a small Iranian directorate set up in the Pentagon with people who'd been at the Office of Special Plans during the run-up to the Iraq War. These people very much supported regime change in Iran, and they were participating in this Iran-Syria operations group. Junior Senator Robert Casey on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was asking Burns about this in testimony a couple months back and got a written response back at the end of May from Burns saying, oh, by the way, that group has been shut down. So my understanding is that Burns had never liked the group. He felt that it was leading to a turf war and that people were going to too many meetings and nothing was getting done, and he wanted just to clean up the process.
Was Donald Rumsfeld one of the regime change people before he was forced out as Secretary of Defense?
I don't think I know that Rumsfeld was a regime changer on Iran so much as his department authorized a lot of unusual things on Iran, and it was primarily the Pentagon that was the center with moral support, perhaps from Cheney's office, for the regime change option. In particular, it was people in Feith's former policy shop that were most active on trying to explore unconventional options for overturning the Iranian regime. There were a couple officials who worked for Feith at the time who met with an old arms dealer from the Iran-Contra era named Manoohar Ghorbanifar. They were authorized by the top levels of the Pentagon to go meet with Ghorbanifar in Rome and in Paris. Ghorbanifar was asking for $20 million from the U.S. government to, he said, implement a coup in Tehran. And Tenet's, the former CIA director's, George Tenet's book describes, you know, the CIA learning about the Pentagon running around meeting with these Iranian oppositionists and not being really part of the channel, which is highly unusual. And I think it just speaks to, 4 years ago, how close we were to those people who wanted to change the regime in Iran, getting very close to the White House, getting close to the White House authorizing, you know, contemplating that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the new Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates? Where does he stand on Iran? What's his strategy?
My understanding is that Gates is far more pragmatic and moderate. He's been part of this Iraq study group, or he had been until he was appointed defense secretary, that was strongly urging the Bush administration to talk with two of Iraq's, you know, Iraq's neighbors, including Syria and Iran, about trying to stabilize the country. He also last week made a point of saying that now that there are intelligence reports that Iranian weapons are turning up in the hands of their former enemies, the Taliban in Afghanistan, that still the U.S. didn't have evidence that it was the Iranian government per se arming the Taliban. So he's definitely made efforts to make public statements that seem to show an effort to moderate the policy.
Now, in May, the U.S. had warships doing drills, military drills, right off the coast of Iran. How do you read that?
I think the U.S. decided in December that they were going to seriously ramp up their effort to show Iran that we were tough, the U.S. was tough, despite the difficulties for the U.S. in Iraq. And so, you know, you saw Bush in January make this very aggressive statement about sending defensive missiles to Sunni allies in the Gulf. We were going to be sending warships there. He had the next day the U.S. Detained several Iranians at an Iranian office in the Kurdish city of Erbil. Those people are still being detained. The U.S. let it be leaked to the New York Times and the Washington Post that Bush had authorized killing Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps people acting in Iraq. So I think the U.S. has been trying to increase its leverage with Iran, actually in the hopes of being able to talk with Iran. I think that it's actually they're trying to look tougher and let Iran know that we're not a paper, you know, the U.S. is not a paper tiger as it tries to seek a diplomatic solution to the crisis.
My guest is Laura Rosen, national security correspondent for The Washington Monthly and a contributor to National Journal. We'll talk more about the Bush administration and Iran after a break. This is Fresh Air. We have been talking about the advocates of regime change in Iran, and you say that they have considerably less power in the Bush administration than they did before. And you say that Condoleezza Rice is now a strong advocate for behavior change in Iran. What's her strategy?
Her strategy is essentially an indirect one of getting the rest of the world as much as possible to join an alliance, a U.S.-led alliance, to pressure Iran with all sorts of sanctions and diplomatic means, plus carrots, the offer that if Iran agrees to this, they'll get all sorts of good things, for Iran to change its behavior. That's her approach. And it's an approach that actually the U.S. succeeded at with North Korea just a few months ago. So I think there's a lot of pessimism inside the U.S. government. They're not seeing the Iranian regime's behavior change. They say that their lives are preoccupied with evidence that Iran is supporting insurgents killing coalition forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. But They are trying now to get a new round, a third round of international sanctions against Iran that may be more meaningful, in the hopes that that would make the difference. That, you know, if they make the top leaders of the regime hurt enough, that they could get, you know, them to finally start thinking about changing their behavior.
Condoleezza Rice's deputy Nicholas Burns is the main State Department point person on Iran. He worked in the Clinton administration. He was Clinton's ambassador to Greece, and he was a spokesperson for the State Department under Madeleine Albright. Is he a surprise choice for the Bush administration?
No, I mean, actually, there's several people who are taking sort of key positions, especially in the second-term State Department, who are not ideologues, who are career diplomats and professionals. Chris Hill is the diplomat who just won the agreement with North Korea a couple months back, is someone who served as an ambassador for Clinton to Macedonia and Poland. And you see other career appointments of people who are not ideologues or controversial choices, like John Bolton, who's also been left the administration.
So what has Nicholas Burns' approach been to working with allies in creating carrots and sticks for Iran?
So Burns has led the process of getting UN International Security Council resolutions. They have a Chapter 7 resolution on Iran, which means that, you know, the Security Council decided that Iran was in breach of its agreement to the International Atomic Energy Association on its nuclear program and not in compliance. And they've managed to actually get two rounds of sanctions through the UN Security Council. They're just not very meaningful sanctions. And it's somewhat voluntary what countries decide to do. So you've seen Treasury Department officials running around, even to international banks, saying, this is not a good thing for your shareholders, for you all to be financing various energy projects in Iran. So they're trying to work through all sorts of ways of trying to get major international companies and countries to invest less in Iran. Russia sells weapons still to Iran. China does a lot of energy investment in Iran. So that's the challenge.
Now, you write that there's a second track of U.S. policy toward Iran, promoting democracy over the long haul. Now, does this mean, like, covert actions?
No, I actually don't think it means covert actions. I think that last year, largely because there was pressure coming from especially conservatives in Congress, Rice made a big high-profile announcement that the U.S. was going to be asking for $77 million from Congress to promote democracy in Iran. One thing I think she was trying to do at the time was co-opt some of the people who want to do regime change by doing some things that look a little bit like the U.S. is supporting regime change, when in fact the policy was moving very much towards, you know, traditional coercive diplomacy, tough diplomacy. But this program ultimately raised $66 million from Congress. I think about $50 million of that went to support U.S. government-funded broadcasting on Iran and Farsi language programming. And probably only $20 million plus went to support actual promoting civil society and democracy in Iran. And most of that money, my understanding is, went through two U.S. foundations and human rights groups that have expanded Iran programs. It's been reported that Freedom House and Human Rights Watch, I think Amnesty International, and the National Endowment of Democracy, IRI, the International Republican and National Democratic Institutes, also are having expanded Iran programs. So very little of the money, as far as I can tell from my reporting, is actually going to anyone in Iran. But the problem is that the Iranian regime is already quite paranoid and quite brutal. It doesn't need too much excuse to arrest dissidents and students, women activists, human rights activists. And lots of U.S. talk about this democracy promotion program has led to really an incredibly serious crackdown in Iran that the Washington Post recently described as the worst in, you know, since the revolution of 1979. And you talk to people at the State Department, and you're like, is this worth it? You're not really getting that much democracy and civil society promotion from the money. And they say, you know, kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't, that this is a real reflection of U.S. values to promote civil society. It is a very brutal regime. they don't accept that the U.S. program is what's leading to this tremendous crackdown. But it's clear that the Iranian government is using that program as an excuse to arrest, in particular recently, several Iranian Americans who are indirectly or directly associated with various think tanks that are suspected of having U.S., you know, U.S. government funding. Although all signs are that these people have nothing to do with any plans for a velvet revolution in Iran.
Now, you know, you described Cheney as one of the regime change hawks left in the administration. In mid-May, he was on board the USS John Stennis, which is an aircraft carrier that's now stationed in the Gulf. And from the Stennis, he said, "We'll stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region." Now, when Cheney says that, it's hard to know how to interpret it, since, as you say, he's really, you know, one of the hawks who favors regime change in Iran. So how did you interpret it?
I interpreted it as, you know, Cheney being a sort of unapologetic, you know, hawk on Iran, who's not really very easily able to be controlled by the Bush administration. And I think that, you know, one senses that Condoleezza Rice, as the Secretary of State, is always trying to make whatever Cheney had just recently said sound like it's all part of the same policy that she's leading, and that, you know, that she sort of lets him say what he wants to say as long as the president is listening to her and letting her sort of take the lead on this policy. But there's no question that there are internal disputes still within the administration about, you know, ultimately whether they're going to be able to finish their term without having taken military action on Iran. At this point, it's fairly clear from U.S. government sources that the U.S. is not going to pursue regime change in Iran, but there is a sense that 10 or 12 months from now, as the U.S. starts to shift its posture in Iraq, if they are not seeing Iran agree to suspend its uranium enrichment and suspend its sort of destabilization that it's accused of doing in Iraq and Afghanistan and Lebanon and now Gaza, that those who believe the U.S. has to do a military confrontation on Iran before the Bush administration leaves office may again have a window of opportunity.
Are you saying that even though regime change might not be the immediate goal, there might be an airstrike against Iran to
Yes.
prevent it from getting nuclear weapons, like maybe an airstrike against one of its nuclear facilities?
Yes, exactly. I've heard, you know, that would be the Navy's job. The goal would not be regime change. It would be, you know, strikes on Bushehr and Natanz, and that it would be limited to the goal of trying to degrade Iran's nuclear capability, not to try to overthrow the regime.
What are some of the consequences an airstrike like that might have?
There's so many national security experts who think it would be a disaster, that it wouldn't actually prevent Iran from very long from being able to produce nuclear weapons, that Iran would almost certainly retaliate, and that it has the capability to work through groups like Hezbollah to strike, you know, U.S. troops in Iraq, U.S. allies in the region. So there are a lot of people who think it's a disaster. That said, there are some people who believe that even a Democratic administration could find itself at some point in the future committed to not letting Iran get nuclear weapons, having to confront the same choice. And there's some talk that some people may be able to prevail upon Bush, that he's the only person who can do this. You know, he's not running again. Cheney's not running again. That, you know, Iran poses a existential threat to Israel, and Iran with nuclear weapons is a threat to the U.S. national security interests and to that of our allies. And if this administration or the next is not able to persuade Iran to suspend its program, I do think it's likely in the next few years that there will be a confrontation. I don't think, as in North Korea, that they will allow Iran to get nuclear weapons if they can stop it.
Well, Laura Rosen, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Laura Rosen is national security correspondent for The Washington Monthly and a contributor to National Journal. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.